You're listening to the Art of Parenting podcast. I'm your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell. Welcome and thank you for joining me. I created this podcast along with everything I do at yourparentingmentor.com to support and inspire you to be the best parent you can be. I know for a fact and from experience that parenting was never meant to be done alone. From conception to preschool, my mission is to give you the tools, strategies, and knowledge to embrace and elevate your parenting experience. I'm dedicated to supporting, inspiring, and guiding you to nurture your child's immense potential with as much joy and ease as humanly possible. Make sure to take time to check out all of the resources I have gathered for you in the show notes, as well as on my website, yourparentingmentor.com. And be sure to get on my email list so you do not miss a single episode and other products and events I curate specifically for you. And please do not hesitate to reach out if you have any questions, concerns, or feedback. A warm welcome to you and thanks for tuning in. Hello and welcome back to The Art of Parenting. This is your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell. And today I have the lovely Kelly Coleman. And we're going to have, I think it could be a sensitive conversation for some, but an important conversation for all. And that is living with a disabled child and kind of what that takes and the challenges that go around it. So Kelly, thank you so much for making the time out of your busy schedule to be here with us and to talk about your knowledge, your wisdom, and your experience with us today.
Thank you for having me and for contributing to the parenting conversation. I love that you view parenting as a big puzzle that we all need to figure out the pieces. And I so appreciate you getting us more in touch with our children and ourselves in this process.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And as I always like to start, and this is a great segue, is what is your definition of the art of parenting?
My definition of the art of parenting, I have been thinking about so much and have really been enjoying this exercise as I've been getting ready for our conversation. For me, I'm the parent of two amazing kids, one of whom is disabled, one is not. I am not disabled myself. And at first, I had all these answers that seemed specific to my child with a disability, but then I realized it's really just parenting. And so the art of parenting for me is really about the parent and how we ourselves can not try and make our kids into something, but instead how we can model the behavior that we would like our children to learn at every turn. And we can give them ourselves as models and then fully and wholly support them in however and whoever they become, whether that is just like us or whether that is totally different than anything we ever imagined. And I think that's not parenting a disabled child. I think that's just parenting.
Yes, yes, I agree wholeheartedly with you. Is this notion of being so aware of what we're modeling to this new human being, right? Because we are modeling what it is to be human on planet Earth, and if we do a good job of modeling it, well, maybe we'll do a good job of, you know, raising the next generation of good-hearted humans. So beautifully said. Thank you for that. And Kelly, I would love, before we get too involved in our conversation, if you could share a little bit about your background and how you came to do the work that you're doing. And I know you have a book that has just come out, and I'd love for you to share a bit about that as well.
Yes, thank you. So in my previous life and for years before having kids, I worked in feature film development, mostly in animation. So I got paid to come up with ideas for talking animal movies, which is lots of fun. And I did choose to walk away from working outside of the home for many years. When I had children, especially our younger son, who had exponential support needs and time requirements, that I became a parent caregiver very quickly. And I'm really focused now on writing books and also advocating within the space of not just disability, but also for parent caregivers and how we are getting the supports to our children that they need, but also how we are getting the support as parent caregivers that we need. I serve on committees for the Los Angeles Unified School District, Children's Hospital Los Angeles, our service dog organization, Canine Companions. And I'm very excited about my new book. It's called Everything No One Tells You About Parenting a Disabled Child, Your Guide to the Essential Systems, Services, and Supports. And it's really the handbook that I desperately needed a decade ago. Most of us, when we find out our children are disabled, we are shocked because there's just no conversation about disability happening, period, with expectant parents, with people who are even thinking about becoming parents, with parents of young children. So it seemed shocking because we were not yet familiar with the reality that disability is actually a quite common part of the human experience. And so many of us parents are just reinventing the exact same wheels to get our kids the support they need. And so I wanted to write a book that is that handbook for all of us, not just at the very beginning of our journeys, but as we continue and are looking at future care plans and figuring out our insurance plan and school and what this looks like for us as a parent caregiver and disability rights and advocacy. And kind of what is that foundational information that everyone needs across demographics so we all have equal access to information so that all of our children can succeed equally as the, you know, fullest and best version of themselves, even when that does look very different from one child to the next.
Hmm. And your son is very lucky to have you by his side to be such a advocate and just doing all the work that you're doing, I have to say.
Thank you so much.
No, that's a lot.
I think we are all the best parents for our individual children, and we all do great things. We all say, oops, I did that wrong. That was a mistake. So I believe I am the best parent for each of my children, and I feel fortunate that I'm in a position to share knowledge and expertise with so many others.
Yes, yes, and so needed. And when you, you say that it's been a decade, have you seen an evolution in the care, in the kind of talking about it? Because I started the show with saying it might be a sensitive conversation because I feel that up until recently, disability was something that we hid, right? That it was kind of, I'm actually reading a book right now that I don't know why I'm thinking of it, but it's leprosy. And it's just how shunned they were and how, and it's just terrible because these people are, need love and compassion just like anybody else. And, before, I think, many decades ago, children like yours were probably put in institution and hidden from the world, right? And parents were made to feel awful for having had children like that and so forth. I feel that has evolved, that there's a lot more acceptance. But you being in the trenches, what is your view on that? Like, has there been more acceptance? Is there more support than you had maybe 10 years ago?
Yes. Thank you for asking and being willing to wade into this conversation. This is so hugely important. And some of the things you are saying are the things that people feel like they can't talk about. The fact that, like, oh, disability is still in some circles seen as undesirable, shameful, like all of these things. And I think so there's a big picture answer and there's my personal answer. My personal answer is, wow, night and day from where I started, knowing nothing and coming from a place of ignorance, and this just seems so scary, to now. And like, you know what? It's just Thursday. Like, it is hard, and there are hard things, and my son is in a very marginalized group, and he has many disabilities, but loving him isn't hard. Like, he's a great kid. So for me personally, I've followed many disabled people online and have spoken with and become friends with disabled adults and been part of advocacy. And all of that is part of the picture for me. But really, just getting to know my kid is the biggest thing. And big picture, I think if we look at how disability has been viewed and how that has evolved, it makes sense that we are reaching a point, you know, certainly in the last 10 years, but even leading up to that, where disability isn't just, oh, you poor thing, you have to put your kid in an institution, because that was never a consideration for us. But that was literally what happened. And only recently, because of advances in care and support and healthcare, that disabled individuals haven't been institutionalized. Life expectancies and quality of life has increased. And we only recently have the first generation of, I'll say, disabled elders within the disability rights and advocacy community. Judy Heumann, who recently passed, Justin Dart, Geraldine Hawkins, so many individuals who have paved the way for this happening and for disability and disabled people being visible, not just in disabled spaces and in disability advocacy, but being present everywhere in the world. And as diagnosis rates have really gone up over the years for a lot of different neurodivergence and considerations on that front. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 1 in 36 kids is born with a birth defect. I hate the word defect, but there you go. And in addition, there are developmental disabilities. 1 in 4 adults in America is disabled, and any of us could become disabled at any time. So if we don't start talking about this, like, we are just in for a world of hurt. And the way that I felt when I found out my baby was disabled, like, that was horrible and could have been avoided because it was coming from ignorance. And follow disabled people online, and you will very quickly have your world opened up by that one very simple step of, oh, yeah, there are different needs and supports and accommodations and all that, but people are just living life. And by my son being out in the world and living life is an example to other parents who maybe will have a child like him of their own and say, oh, you know what? I saw that kid putting baby carrots in his mom's grocery cart the other day and then high-fiving the person restocking the shelves. Maybe this isn't so bad after all. It can be hard, and that's okay.
So I like, you know, it sounds to me like there has been a very positive evolution, not only in just our awareness, our acceptance, but also in the care of disabled people in general. But I feel that, you know, you're maybe coming from a place of, if I can use the word privilege, you're, you know, living in Los Angeles, a great city, you know, you were in the film industry, all of this. What do you say to people who might not have the means that you have? And I know you kind of introduced your work, you know, at the beginning that you wanted this to be accessible to everyone. Is that a reality today in the United States? Like, how just is this whole system of navigating, you know, caring for a disabled child in this country?
Caring for a disabled child in this country varies wildly based on every demographic factor, based on race, income, ability to speak English as a first language or fluently, depending on what state or even which county or area you are in. It's a mess. And I have the privilege not only of being a white lady who speaks English, which that statistically is a privilege. The California Department of Developmental Services released a report last year that Latino families who are receiving state funding for developmental disabilities, Latino families receive 41 cents on the dollar for what white families are receiving, and that's not okay. And we should all be infuriated by this.
Yes.
And this is in California, where our services and supports are plentiful compared to other states. Even within the same federal guidelines, even under the Americans with Disabilities Act and many other federal laws, things are administered on a state level. So each state is very different. And we need to be honest about the fact that my kids' friends don't all get the same supports that he does because of their demographic. And that's not okay. And that is really the biggest reason that prompted me to write this book. Is information is out there, and sure, yeah, we can all go, but time is a huge privilege, and we need to acknowledge that. As I was writing this book, I was working hard to say, my family has the privilege of having insurance. My family has the privilege of being able to create a future care plan for our son. What happens when that's not the case? And I literally chose some different states and looked up their Department of Developmental Services and Googled it, pulled up a website, and just found some people's names and email addresses and was emailing and saying, hey, I'm helping out families. They do not have the means to put together future care plans for their disabled children. What do we do? And let's be honest, it is this in the state's interest if you can figure this out, because it is very expensive and very time consuming and not ideal for the children who will become adults to have the state figure it out. And I was pleasantly surprised. I received emails back with either phone numbers, emails of the people who could answer this and saying there are supports, but it is different. And that's not okay. And any of us that has the capacity to share wisdom and expertise in a way that can be understood and used. My book is very conversational intentionally, because all of this, I don't know how to call my insurance company, like what? I figured it out. But we need to be explaining and talking about things in a way that everyone can understand, because everyone and everyone's child deserves the same access.
Yes, yes. And when you're describing that, I can like only imagine the amount of just stress that it brings on. Because I mean, parenting as a whole is already something kind of, you know, anxiety inducing, because you want to, you know, do things right. And with, you know, economics, when now, you know, probably if there are two parents in the household, they're both working. If it's a single parent, they're working full time. If, you know, one job, two job, three jobs. And you said something very powerful, is that time is a privilege. Like you were, you know, you were able to choose to not go back to work and to be the full time caregiver, but that's not, you know, accessible to everyone. So, you know, are there organisms that really help these families, or, you know, are they really kind of just left to figure this out completely on their own? And your book, I know, will help many, but when you've researched your, you know, for your book, are there individuals or associations or all this that you can call on and say, you know, help, I'm sinking, like this is impossible?
Yes. And know that as a parent caregiver of a disabled child, you will sink. There will be times when this will be hard and you will have a really hard time keeping it together. I speak from experience. Everyone I've talked to says the same thing. The number one thing I tell families, every single state has a parent training and information center. The parent and training information center is generally run and fully staffed by fellow parents who have been through this, so they can communicate things in a way that you can understand. And it is so important to connect with people in your state and in your county, in your specific area, because of how services and supports are distributed and what is available. So connecting with your local parent and training and information center will set you on a path where you don't feel inadequate and like you're floundering, like I felt for years. And boy, I wish someone had sent me here. That is a great place to begin for resources. Also, your local children's hospital will have social workers. And by the way, even if your local children's hospital is 2 hours away, call and speak with their social workers. Those people are often so well versed and adept with working with families. There are people who want to help, and those two resources will take you quite far in getting started.
Beautiful. But for me, it sounds like no one really pointed you in the right direction. At the beginning, which to me, I don't understand, because I mean, your pediatrician or, you know, the hospital saw and knew what was going on for you, and yet they didn't give you kind of any type of direction as to where to get support?
There was an amount of that. Part of the challenge that we faced, that many families face, so our son has a still undiagnosed genetic syndrome, and I think so many people without a diagnosis face, well, let's try and get a diagnosis first. The amount of time I spent floundering is minuscule compared to what other families go through. And our pediatrician did, you know, after my son was hospitalized for not eating when he was 3 months old, we did get referred to our state's agency that provides services for kids with disabilities. And jumping through the hoops to try and get onboarded with that was just kind of gut-wrenching, as you pointed out, while you were also just parenting.
Exactly.
And, you know, I was parenting a baby and a toddler. And parenting and being a caregiver are two distinct jobs. When they merge, that's like two full-time jobs right there. So for me to try and figure this out, most social service agencies and schools won't say, here are the range of services available. They'll kind of pick and choose and maybe mention some things here and there. And oftentimes, if a parent asks, hey, do you offer feeding therapy and early intervention for children under age 3? Which took me years to even figure out that sentence. They'll say, oh, yes, we do. And your child has a feeding tube. So we should be giving him feeding therapy because that is appropriate and, you know, covered within the laws. But people don't tell you these things. And then you talk to other parents and then you realize the level of advocacy that you need to have for your child at every turn is intense.
Right, right. And that to me just seems like absurd that they're not talking. But the wonderful thing, Kelly, is that now they can hand your book to parents right from the start. So that's like, it needs to be in everybody's hands that are navigating this parenting journey. So wonderful. Now, you know, you mentioned that you have another child, and I'm a little bit intrigued as to how your child, who I assume is an older sibling, how has he navigated having a brother with such intense disabilities? Because you did mention there's undiagnosed, and I know there's other disabilities, but how has that been for you as a family and for him as a child?
So the sibling experience is such a unique and fascinating one, and also so important to talk about. The way that my boys have forged their relationship is very different than how it looks in other families, and we need to honor the full range of experience and what each sibling is experiencing and feeling and doing. In my specific case, our boys are about 19 months apart, so our older son has not ever known anything different. For years, and certainly before they were in school, You know, he would be shuttled around to therapies with us many days of the week. Feeding tubes are a part of his life. 911 calls are a part of his life. You know, our younger son, Aaron, his needs are behavioral, medical, cognitive, sensory, just really so many things across the board. And our older son, Sean, has grown up with just so much love for his brother. Adult siblings of other disabled adults that I've spoken with have really talked about the number one determiner of how a child will feel about their sibling's disability is how the parents feel about the disability and what they are projecting. You know, back to the art of parenting, what are we modeling? We don't model that this is great and amazing and, oh my gosh, epilepsy. Isn't that the best? Because that's not real. Let me tell you, epilepsy is not the best.
No.
We don't model some sort of toxic positivity. Oh, Aaron's a hero because he's disabled. Nope, he's a 10-year-old kid. What we do model is during those hard times, we acknowledge and we validate and wow, that was hard for Aaron to go through that episode. And it was hard for all of us. And we give Sean a job and so that he always is part of things. But we also lean into all the wonderful things about Aaron and we don't make him as a human all about disability. He loves airplanes. He loves swimming. He has fabulous hair and is the mayor of the grocery store. Like, we talk about disability as one of the many facets of who he is as a full and complete human. And we encourage Sean to feel however he wants to feel about that. And if ever there is a time, they have a great relationship. If ever there's a time when he doesn't feel awesome about that, it would be a mistake to scold him for that or tell him not to feel that way. You know, with any of our kids, if we just say, tell me more and validate, I think that really builds so much of them feeling connected to us and to themselves.
Right. And I would imagine that your eldest son also has to navigate kind of the, maybe the viewpoint of others. You know, I think other children, other humans can sometimes be really mean. And how do you, you know, navigate that in a world that is not always friendly and accepting. And as a 12-year-old, I can imagine that that can be somewhat difficult for him. And how do you help him kind of navigate that with the outside world?
Mm-hmm. So this has been on our mind since day one, since we knew Aaron had something going on, even well before we knew much about him as a person. And starting, you know, when Sean was relatively young and when it was appropriate, we had these conversations and we said, you know what? Most people have not been around anybody who's disabled that they're aware of. And with a disability that's visible, like Aaron's is, you can tell by looking at him that he's got something going on. And we have flat out said, people will stare. People will say mean things. People will make fun of your brother. Let's talk through that. When that happens, what will you say? If you hear somebody say this word to describe your brother or this or make this face or you can't control them. Doesn't say anything about your brother. It just says something about who they are, which is not very nice. But we've really modeled, hey, what can you say? And kind of amazingly, we have yet to hit a point when it has been an issue for him. I think largely because he has a close group of friends that he's grown up with who have also known Aaron from earliest ages. So it's not a big deal to them. And they all come over and say hi. And then Aaron walks in the other room because he doesn't want to hang out with them or whatever the case may be. But I think when we are honest with our kids of like, yep, your brother's going to get made fun of. What are we going to do about it? It lets the air out of the balloon in a way that I think sets our kids up for success and lets them know if somebody says something mean about Aaron, it actually has nothing to do with Aaron.
Right. And that's, I mean, you've modeled, you know, just this beautiful kind of acceptance and empathy for and compassion for other human beings. So that is beautiful. Like he's set for for life. That's amazing. That's wonderful.
Thank you. And I think to build on that, something that we discovered is our reactions to everything. Aaron is loud and proud and makes lots of sounds and claps and all the things and is just always on display. And for too long, frankly, we sort of walked through life apologizing until we realized he's not actually doing anything wrong. Like, is there anything wrong with standing outside of the grocery store and squealing and applauding loudly for airplanes passing by? No, there's actually nothing wrong with that. So what are the messages that we want Sean to hear, that we want Aaron to hear, and that we want everybody else to hear? We do not want to, if our kids are doing something wrong, hopefully they will apologize for themselves. We will apologize for them. We are happy to check that box. But if Aaron isn't doing anything wrong and he's just being him and he's just asking strangers for high fives at the library, we're actually not going to apologize for that. Because we will say, thank you for understanding. Yes, he is loud because he is so excited on this airplane. Thank you for understanding. Gives such a different framework when we say thank you for understanding. And we're not using his disability to explain away behavior that somebody else might not like. We're just saying, this is life. Thank you for understanding. Rather than saying, oh, I'm so sorry. Isn't this the worst? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you say that, I'm also hearing just parents of, you know, toddlers who are just rambunctious and excited and all this. And I know some, you know, cringe and feel kind of embarrassed at the store and everything. And I always remind them, like, let them be children, like, you know, it's okay. You know, if the one person gets annoyed because they're not happy-go-lucky, then that's not your problem.
Absolutely. And being confident enough in yourself to recognize, oh, that's actually about them and not about me. And yes, there are times when a parent isn't doing their job and their kids are all over the place in a way that isn't appropriate. But we also need to understand that not all disabilities are visible. And maybe that parent is actually doing a better job than all other parents combined, and they are supporting their kid. And because their kid is behaving in a way that, you know, Sally doesn't like, then Sally needs to rethink, because it's actually a much bigger picture than I think most of us realize with a lot of kids.
Definitely. And it's just, it's a societal thing, right? It's what we were talking about earlier. It's just this whole acceptance and access to care and so forth. Like it encompasses all of that. So wonderful. Thank you. Well, thank you for all of this. I just want to give you the opportunity, if there's anything that you want to share more specifically about, you know, some things that you discovered as you did the research for your book or such that I might not know to ask.
I love that you asked this question, because what you might not know to ask is something that I didn't know until way too recently. It's that we need to learn about disability from disabled people. That sounds so obvious, but so many of us aren't learning from real firsthand experience, and all the things we're making up in our heads are really scary, but disability actually doesn't need to be scary at all. And not just parents of disabled kids, not just parents, but all of us. Even something as simple as following disabled leaders and disability organizations on social media and reading what they post, what the challenges are, what the triumphs are, you know, what they're having for lunch. Oh, you know what? They're having lunch just like you are. It demystifies so much, and it takes away our own ignorance when we are genuinely curious about other humans as humans. So, you know, the biggest thing I would say to other people, especially those starting off on this journey, is really get information about disability from disabled people, and that will begin to make everything easy, because you'll be approaching things from a place of humanity and shared humanity. And it takes almost no time.
Yes, yes. And I like that of diversifying where you're getting your information, because it's true, I think, today with our social media, like we curate it just the way we want to, right? And so we kind of put on blinders and we're not open to, you know, I know I try to follow people that aren't like me because I want to learn. I want to expand my horizon. So thank you for that. That's wonderful. Now, I'd love to circle back to the birth of your first child, Sean. So you said he's 12. If you were to go back maybe 13 years ago when you were first expecting your first child, what wise words would you tell yourself knowing all that you know today?
It's interesting you ask that from the perspective of when I was pregnant with Sean, because that takes it all the way back to the beginning of the parenting journey. And I think I would look back and say, oh, here I go. I'm going to cry. Like,
oh, sweetie.
This is what happens when you talk about your kids, because my kids are awesome. I wouldn't cry so much if they weren't awesome. that everything, like, it sounds, again, sort of trite, but everything is going to be okay with, like, every member of your family. We had a long journey to getting pregnant in the first place. And miscarriages and all kinds of things within that. And this journey and this adventure, as you've put it, which is so great, like it is all the things. It is hard. It is hilarious. It is wild. It is unexpected. It is beautiful. And even in the hardest times, there will be beauty that comes out of that. There are times that still don't feel like they were beautiful because they were just hard and awful, but there's always something on the other side of that, even the hardest times.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you for that. And I know that's brings up a lot of emotion. So thank you for your honesty and your vulnerability. Much appreciated. Now, any parting words that you would like to leave our listeners with today, Kelly?
I'd love for your listeners to understand that if they or someone they know has a child who is disabled, the supports and services are there, whether it's getting foundational information from my book, whether it's starting with your parent training and information center. Do not be deterred, especially if you are not a native English speaker. They want you to show up in these spaces to make the phone calls. They will help you. There are supports available for your child, and start with other parents and with resources, because people will be there to help you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Those are very good words of encouragement for all parents. Thank you. Well, Kelly, this has been delightful. I really appreciate your time and just your honest conversation around this topic. So thank you.
Thank you for all that you are doing and contributing. I really appreciate you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Art of Parenting podcast. And if you did, please share it with your loved ones and make sure to leave a review so it can get heard by many more. And remember, if you've got a question, let me know. I'm here for you. Till next time.